little ridiculous. I told Kurt Warner that I would gladly play him in the movie.
And he didn't even listen?
I didn't even know. You know, I would gladly play Kurt in the movie.
Which one would, what age range would you play? I mean, I assume that they're probably going to tell the story starting out in Northern Iowa and as the grocery store clerk. And then
that wouldn't have worked.
European football.
Said Northern Iowa.
Northern Iowa. Yeah.
Northern Iowa.
I'm the quarterback of the Northern Iowa Panthers.
Yeah. That might not have worked so good.
Well, now we have a video to make for our Twitter.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Christian Bale is, you know, he's what, Scottish or something like that, and he plays Americans. And, you know, you could, the real trained actors can throw their voice into any character they're playing.
Yeah.
Can you do that, Campbell?
You know, with Kurt not being as, you know, nearly as good looking as I am either, that probably they needed somebody that, you know, more on his level.
That's right.
And you probably have too good of an arm for the actual movie production. You would have just been overthrowing the receivers all the time. They just wouldn't be able to catch those hot fire balls.
Yeah. I offered.
Yeah.
I did offer.
Next time.
It's kind of crazy, though, to see this actually coming to fruition, the Kurt Warner movie. Yeah.
Kurt's story is amazing.
It is.
I mean, honestly, like, it's almost hard to believe. Like, you were groceries? Like, you were bagging groceries? And then you're in the NFL? Like, that. Yeah. It's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
then you're a Hall of Famer. And a good person, too. I mean, that's the thing about it. Like, there's nobody that doesn't like Kurt Warner. He is a great person, great family man, great man of faith. Everybody respects Kurt. All right, let's get into some NFL stuff. This blew me away. And I checked on it, so I'll give you an update on the Cardinals. But there is a story on Pro Football Talk where they actually say that there are teams that could approach road games where they travel the day of. The planning for the 2020 NFL season includes a revolutionary and risky approach to traveling to road games. Per a league source, multiple teams intend to fly to and from road games on the day of the game. That does not happen. That does not happen. But they're saying that it could now. It's an idea that's been percolating for a while. Peter King floated it a couple of months ago. And it could be a reality. You know, teams could fly. Like, if you're playing Seattle or the 49ers or the Rams and you're the Cardinals, hey, why go a day or two before? Maybe just, you know, because then you avoid the meals, you avoid the hotels, you avoid less buses, right? You don't have to take a bus from the plane to the hotel, then the hotel to the stadium, then the stadium back. You arrive and you go right to the stadium. And then that's it. So you eliminate a little bit of bus travel, you eliminate hotels, you eliminate meals, you eliminate people having the need to go out, you know, and go take a walk or go do something, and you can control your environment a little bit better.
It's possible to do this for some games. I mean, using the Arizona Cardinals as the example, the only games that they could probably do this with are their NFC West division games. Games that, because I believe Seattle is about a four-hour flight. So San Fran, less than that. L.A., about an hour. That is potentially doable. But even Seattle, a 4-hour flight for a game that starts at 2 o'clock, what time would you have to be leaving? And then what? I mean,
it's private planes. So it's not like, you know.
You still need to get up there. You still have to drive to the stadium. Right, you still have to get taped up. You still have to stretch.
8 a.m.?
8 a.m. would put you up there at noon for a 2 o'clock game.
Wait,
I mean, is that cutting it too
four
close?
Hours? Four hours to get to L.A. or San Francisco?
Yeah. I think maybe Eastern Conference, or not Eastern Conference, but East Coast teams, that is maybe a little bit more doable because the cities are so close.
So the Cardinals are going to play the Rams. What's the flight to L.A.? An hour and 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. You leave at 8 a.m. You leave at 9 a.m.
So it sounds like you're possibly on board with this.
I mean, it makes some sense. I mean, it does make some sense if you're trying to control the environment. Remember, they're not in a bubble. So, they're going to have a harder time controlling the environment. So, I mean, the thing I would worry about is, I mean, what if you get on that plane and there's, like, mechanical failures? And, we can't take off right now. And then, you know, you get delayed. I would worry about that. I'd worry about what if there's some reason the plane can't take off because something didn't check out. That stuff happens.
Or if you're getting into the fall and into the winter, inclement weather, especially back east, could delay flights,
you're right,
could make
you're
runways
right.
more difficult to land on.
You would only do it on the shorter flights. You, don't
you only can do it on the shorter flights.
Yeah, you don't want to travel 5 hours and then go play a football game 4 hours later. It's just your legs are gone, your body's not right. You can't do but an hour flight? I mean, listen, I mean, if I fly to New York, I feel different than if I just fly to Vegas or L.A. or somewhere like that. It's just you don't really feel any jet lag on a flight that's just an hour long.
Well, especially
by the time you get up, they're descending. You don't feel it. So I think the L.A., the San Francisco, to Seattle, I think those trips you could probably leave at 8, 9 o'clock in the morning. And then go play football and then come back the same day. I think it's a possibility.
The other big piece of news in the NFL today, it's been rumored about for a couple of weeks now, but now it is official. The NFL is shortening their 2020 preseason to just 2 games. In essence, they're basically canceling weeks 1 and weeks 4 from the original preseason schedule. So now the first batch of preseason games won't start until August 20th through the 24th.
Makes all the sense in the world. All the sense. Like, there is no reason not to go to 2 preseason games. You're going to do it anyway, right? You're going to end up just going to 2 preseason games once they move the schedule next year. So this was just a foregone conclusion. And it's the right thing to do because you eliminate 2 games. Now, we don't know which games they've eliminated yet, right?
Well, they're basing it off of basically they're cutting weeks 1 and weeks 4. But the one thing that they want to make sure is that each team has a road game and a home game to kind of get the protocols and the feel for what the regular season could be like. So there might be a little shifting going on with that. But if it stands the way that it is right now for the Arizona Cardinals, that would mean that their first preseason game would be home against the Chiefs, and then their only other preseason game would be at the Raiders.
Yeah, which is the one that they want really bad.
Yeah.
Somehow they were going to make sure they had that game, that Raiders game. They want to be the ones to open up that stadium. Yeah, it makes sense. 2 less games. You know, at this time with the coronavirus and the pandemic, that's less travel and less connecting with another team and less tackling. Everything you can do. I wouldn't eliminate it to none. You got to play the 2 preseason games. But this made sense even when we weren't in a pandemic.
Yeah.
This made sense.
Yeah, I mean, no one has liked the 4-game preseason schedule for years. For years.
No. And now, here's another NFL thing. The NFL training camp rosters. Normally, each team is 53 players on the roster, 46 active on game day. Part of the new collective bargaining agreement was increasing each of those values by 2. But now they're thinking about, you know, maybe trimming the size of the training camp rosters because of the coronavirus, just, you know, eliminating some players that probably weren't going to have any chance to make the team anyway.
But on the flip side of that, if you start having injuries and positive tests cropping up in your training camp, you're going to need more bodies to then replace those guys. So there's going to need to be some sort of secondary system. And I know that there's been talk of maybe a centralized NFL hub of free agents. But if you're only bringing 70 guys for a 53-man roster and you start having the normal every year occurrence of training camp injuries mixed in with positive COVID tests, you're going to need a pool of players that are ready to step in at pretty much a moment's notice.
Yeah, well, it's the cart before the horse type of thing, right?
Yeah.
If you trim the roster, as they're saying, trimming a roster down by 15 or 20 players could decrease the number of people in a given space. So that would create, you know, they're trying to keep guys distant as much as possible. If you throw, you know, 90 players out there, it's easier to distance with less players. That makes sense, although to me, in the end, these players eventually still all have to, at some point in a practice, they got to be in a huddle and they've got to tackle it. They're going to be a group of 10 or 11 players all together. So at some point, it doesn't make sense because they're still going to have to be involved with other players, breathing on them, saliva, blood, cuts, all of that stuff's going to happen. But they're discussing trimming the training camp rosters.
Make sure you subscribe to the Burns and Gambo podcast. Subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android, and you'll never miss any of the show. It's the Burns and Gambo podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealers. It's pretty obvious to assume that the future of the Suns is built around Devin Booker. So what can these games in Orlando tell the Suns about the future of D-Book and their roster? That's coming up next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
By the way, that promo is probably the biggest lie perpetrated on radio ever. That Shane Doan thing. Dono loves me. I'm like his best friend.
Well, every time he comes on, all you do is talk trash about him.
Yeah, I guess it's just payback.
Payback for what?
Just all the times I talk trash about him.
Oh,
so he goes out with the, I like to be associated with Burns, but the Gambo part I don't know about.
Oh, yeah, come on. Shane Doan's the nicest guy in the world. He doesn't mean it.
God, he is, right?
He is.
You had a contest. Yeah. Who's a nicer person, Shane Doan or Luis Gonzalez?
Ooh.
Or God, you could even throw the other guy we were talking about 15 minutes ago, Kurt Warner.
Oh, yes.
Who's the nicest guy
down
out of those three?
God,
have to go I
down.
Know.
But it's like 1A,
no, they're all
1B,
such good
1C.
People.
We're a little spoiled here in Arizona having sports figures like that. Not every market has them.
We've had plenty of horses' asses, trust me. Plenty of them. So they make up for the fact that we've had so many jerks here.
Shout out to the Morris twins.
Oh my God! Yeah, this is just so I can't even go over it. It's so many. All right, let's talk a little bit about Devin Booker. I was on my way to the barbershop today, and I heard Doug on Doug and Wolf this morning, and he brought up an interesting point. It had me thinking a little bit because Stephen A. Smith started talking about Devin Booker to the Knicks yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Now, he was bringing up the point that Booker's former agent's working for the Knicks now. What's his name? Leon Rose?
Yes.
And he thinks that there might be something to it, which is interesting because maybe, sometimes, listen, there's no doubt about it. There's sometimes that stuff happens, right? And, Doug was bringing up the point, well, maybe, Stephen A. knows something and he just doesn't want to say he knows it. So he's just kind of hinting at it. That stuff happens a lot. I absolutely, and you know this from working with me for so many years, a lot of times when I know stuff, I say I know it. But there are sometimes I just have to kind of hint, like, this is going to happen. And I just, but without saying it'll happen, I just say, okay, here's what I expect to happen. Or here's what I
keep
think
an eye
happen
on this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just stuff that, that's stuff that the way it works. Like, a lot of times I'm able to just say, this is what I expect to happen. And that's how you break stories. But sometimes when, I don't know, if you're protecting a source or something, you just kind of hint that, hey, this is what I think is going to happen. Or this is what I expect is going to happen. Or keep your eye on this, that type of thing. I don't foresee any real situation in which the Suns trade Devin Booker. I'm just going to get that out now. I think the Suns are going to make some moves in the offseason. I think they're going to be very active to go get a power forward. I'm not expecting Dario Saric back. I'm not expecting Aaron Baines back. I think they'll get rid of their backup point guards and bring in a new backup point guard. So when I look at the Suns roster, I honestly see quite a few players who I don't believe are going to be here, next season. I mean, if we go through the roster right now, I'll go through it with you. But Aaron Baines, I don't think will be here. Carter, I don't think will be here. Kaminsky, I don't think will be here. Okobo, I don't think will be here.
Saric
isn't going to be here. And then the biggest question mark for me is really Kelly Oubre. Kelly Oubre, to me, is the one guy who is your biggest trade chip. And, to get something, you have to give something up. So that would be the one. If anybody was going to get traded, I think it would be Oubre. And I think it would be to go get themselves a power forward to mix things up a little bit. You have Mikal Bridges, who is a very dynamic player, a good player that they really like. So if it's not going to be Devin, they'll build around Booker and Ayton. They will build around those two guys. I don't know that they'll build around Booker, Ayton, and Kelly Oubre, because Kelly's only got a year left on his contract. He's going to want a lot of money. And he's your best trade chip. I mean, he's a better trade chip than even your first round pick, because you could trade Kelly and you could get something, for him. I've been focusing for quite some time on Aaron Gordon and whether they should go get Aaron Gordon. They need to get themselves a power forward. It's not going to be, I don't think it'll be Markkanen. I just don't think it'll be Markkanen. And I like Markkanen as a shooter. And it's not going to be, and a lot of people have asked about Danilo Gallinari. It's not going to be Danilo Gallinari. He's older. Gallinari's had an injury history. Yes, he could shoot the basketball. He might be one of the worst defenders in the history of the NBA. I mean, he can't guard anybody. So I think, to me, if they're going to get a power forward, I'm still kind of focusing on Aaron Gordon. Maybe it's somebody else, but, you know, here's a guy, he could defend better than Markkanen and Gallinari. He could get to the, you know, he could dunk, scores on layups, get to the free throw line. I still think that that's the guy. And I have been saying this for quite some time, that I think if they're going to get a power forward, I think they'll try to pull off a trade for Aaron Gordon. The question is just, how do you get him? What would you use to get him? Could it be a Kelly Oubre or their first round pick? Or what would they need to go pry Aaron Gordon out of Orlando?
Whatever combination that is, I have, as much as I love Kelly Oubre and as much as he brings an intensity and a passion to this team, I do think he is somewhat expendable in the fact that you do have Mikal Bridges waiting in the wings that can take some of those minutes from him. Now, he's not nearly the scorer that he is, but Bridges does so many other things at a higher level than Kelly Oubre does now, like play defense, mainly number one. The thing with Booker that I just find so fascinating from people outside of Arizona is this idea that he would want to go to the Knicks. Why would he want to go to the Knicks? The Knicks are just as worse of an organization as the Phoenix Suns.
I think worse.
Well, okay.
They're worse. I grew up a Knicks fan. Worse.
And
the
you
Knicks
don't
are a train wreck.
And here in Phoenix, you do not have the magnetic spotlight on you all the time about how terrible the Knicks actually are. You can kind of, you know, go underneath the radar a little bit here in Phoenix. He already has the makings with the Suns of a better team moving forward than what the Knicks have. So it just is so comical to me, these national people that, oh, Devin Booker should go to the Knicks. Why, if I'm Devin Booker, why would I want to go to the Knicks? I have a far better situation from the young talent here in Phoenix and also my head coach. I have a better situation now than I would have if I go to New York.
Yeah, he's under contract for 4 more years. This thing about, you know, Booker going somewhere. I would not say that Booker is an untouchable commodity. I mean, I would never say that because I just don't believe it's true. I think, you know, I highly doubt that Devin Booker would get traded, but I would never say that he's untouchable. Look, here's the reality. There are probably 12 to 15 star players in this league, you know, that are untouchable, that they're not going anywhere. He's not one of them, okay? You know, on a lot of these teams in the league, there are quite a few teams in the league where Devin Booker is the second or third best player on the team. And that's the truth. Quite a few teams in the league, he's not their top player. He's their second player. And on a few teams, he's the third best player on the team. So if you build around Booker and Ayton, it's not like you've got one of the top 12, top 15 players in the league in Devin Booker. You've got a really, really good player. And you could win with him, but you got to have great depth, and you've got to have another player that's really good, and that has to be DeAndre Ayton. So I still think the plan is to build around Booker, build around Ayton, not to have a big three, but to build around those two guys, make sure you get the right depth, have quality teams, a good bench, because that's how teams can win. You know, that's how teams that don't have, you know, three stars can win. They've got to have great depth.
And that's realistic because, I mean, if you're the Phoenix Suns, how many times have we talked about, oh, the Phoenix market should be a prime destination for free agents? Well, it hasn't been. The Suns haven't landed a gigantic free agent. They haven't landed a free agent star. They have made moves in the past to get big name players here, but that's always been through a trade. And I guess that can still happen. But in terms of, you know, the Suns, oh, well, you know, they need a big three. It's tough to actually accomplish that when you don't even have a big one at the moment. Now, the other thing about Booker and Ayton is, yeah, Booker is not one of those top 10, top 15 guys in the league as of right now. He's also only 23 years old. And so for the Phoenix Suns to say that our two building blocks are going to be Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, that's one guy who's 23 and another guy who is 21, about to turn 22. That's the makeup that I like, because if everything can continue to head in the right direction, if these guys become your big one and your big two, those can be in place for years to come.
Yeah, you know, you've got to build the right depth, so you've got to get some guys that can shoot. You know, the one thing about if you did make a trade for Gordon, and we've talked about it on this show quite a bit, if you did make a trade for Gordon, you know, my one concern would be Rubio doesn't shoot the three. Ayton doesn't shoot the three. Gordon doesn't shoot the three. So that would be the one concern is, can you win when you don't have, you know, the quality of shooting that other teams have? Now, Philly, the 76ers, you know, they win, and they don't have, you know, since Redick left, they don't have a lot of great shooters on their team, and they still win. They've got good size and athleticism, and they get to the rim and the free throw line. So you might be able to win that way. But it's possible, you know, you could have three guys on the court that can't knock down, you know, shots. And then that puts a lot more pressure on the other guys because you wouldn't be, as you know, you'd have three-point shooters, right? Cam's going to be a good three-point shooter in this league. Booker's a good three-point shooter. And you'll go get somebody else. Like, you'll go get a, you know, a Harris or a Forbes or somebody that can knock down shots from the outside coming off the bench. So you'll get guys. But there will be times when you're going to have three guys on the court that aren't guys that are considered good shooters.
Coming up next here on the Burns and Gambo Show, we are just days away from baseball spring training 2.0 getting underway here in the Valley and in baseball markets all across the country. But as we get closer and closer, are the baseball players going to adhere to the rules and safety protocols in place to protect themselves and others? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
All right, 3:30 on this Wednesday in Phoenix. Jordan Bird filling in for Bernsey. We take you right until 6 o'clock. Thanks for joining us on 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. We'll talk a little baseball here. Buster Olney, who has had a lot to say. He's talking a lot about the transparency and the testing. And a couple of his tweets I want to just talk about. He says, as MLB moves closer to summer camp, the sport still awaits word on transparency. Not only do the players and staff deserve to know the complete test results, but also the states, municipalities, especially when some are being asked to waive mandates for baseball's sake. So I guess there's still some protocol going on. He said MLB plans a public reporting of league-wide data listing the overall tests conducted, the number of positive tests, and the percentage of positive tests on a periodic basis. No individuals named, right? So they're not going to like tell you who tests positive because that's HIPAA laws and things like that. But they may just give you a, hey, we tested this many players, because the NBA did that. Hey, we tested 302 players, 16 are positive. And, you know, that's something, because that will ultimately gauge whether you want to continue with the season or whether you have to stop the season will be the amount of tests you are giving and what the positive number is.
Yeah, but what Buster Olney told Golic and Wingo earlier this morning is that at least the players want to know how many tests are coming from each team to try to better protect themselves.
When Major League Baseball learns later this week how many players have tested positive, they owe it to the players and the employees to know exactly how many people have tested positive in every organization. I sent something out along the lines of that on Twitter the other night, and I got back from folks at the team level, basically said, look, because we're trying to honor HIPAA laws, you know, we've been instructed to be more vague. Well, you would hope and you would assume that the Players Association, representing the players, will go to Major League Baseball and say, look, we need to have those numbers precise and out there so that as players make this decision whether or not to participate, they have as full of context as they possibly can about how many people in each clubhouse, each organization are infected.
That seems only fair.
Makes sense. You know, transparency, but you don't have to say it. Like, we know some of the players, like Charlie Blackman of the Colorado Rockies, the all-star center fielder, he tested positive. Players still have to tell you if they test positive. You know, it's up to them if they want it to be public knowledge. It's their health.
Well, you could do it like with the MLS today. We know that
six
FC Dallas players have tested positive. We have no idea, at least as far as I know right now. It might be out there with some of their names on Twitter, but as far as I've found out or have seen today, we're not sure which of those players actually have tested positive. We just know the number from that organization.
It's called the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. You're not allowed to divulge the name of a player who tests positive. So you could say, we've tested this many players, and we had this many positive results, but you just can't say who the player is. And that's okay. because we've heard, you know, this team had two tests positive and this team had three tests positive. So we've heard that, but they don't have to tell you who the player is. But ultimately, that will decide whether, you know, you can go on with a season or not. But the interesting thing is if a guy all of a sudden stops playing in the season, once they start the 60 games, if a guy just disappears, I mean, everybody's just going to automatically assume that that person tested positive. If you didn't see him injured in a game, and all of a sudden he's not there the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day, you'll be like, oh, he must have tested positive for the coronavirus.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be the worst kept secret in the world. I mean, yeah, it's going to be hard to continue to overcome that unless, and I don't believe that teams would go this route, unless you made up an injury for why a guy was absent. Oh, a guy came down with COVID. Oh, and also, by the way, he had some soreness in his shoulder. And that's what officially he's going on the injured list for. But meanwhile, it's something else. That's a slippery slope and very
soreness
shady.
Soreness in his shoulder. You could still be around the team. You know, you could still be in the dugout. Or, yeah. You know, you could still be there.
But also under
COVID-19, you're not going to be at the ballpark. But you're not going to be anywhere around anybody.
But under the circumstances of this season, if a player gets hurt and if it's an injury that's going to keep him out for a large period of time, I wouldn't be surprised if that player decides to go home or no longer stay within the confines of, you know, traveling with the team and things or being in the stadium, because we're supposed to see social distancing in the dugout and in the stadium already. So if you have injured guys, even if it's non-COVID related, you might keep them kind of out of the sight of the public because you're just trying to minimize the bodies that are around the rest of the organization.
It's just going to look so weird, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it just is. And then, you know, I think you sent me something the other day. What was it, the A's or one of these teams is going to sell for $99? They're going to sell the ability to have your cardboard cutout there.
$89, you can have a picture of yourself into a cardboard cutout that will be placed at the A's stadium for A's home games. For $129, you can upgrade and have your cardboard cutout sitting in foul territory. And if a foul ball actually hits your cutout, the team is going to mail you that foul ball.
You know, I've checked with the D-backs. They're kind of against this. They kind of don't like the idea of the cardboard cutouts, but it's in discussion. So,
do you know why they're against it? Is there any particular reason?
It's just something that they don't like. But I do know that if they decide to do something like that, it would be free for the fans. It would be free.
Well, I should say the A's,
they wouldn't charge for it.
According to what I've read, the A's, the money that they're bringing in from this is being donated to their charity. It's not being pocketed by the owners, at least according to the news release that is out there. I want to get to one more Buster Olney quote from Golic and Wingo this morning because I found this fascinating. Buster Olney was talking about within the players, there is not a unified stance on social distancing and some of the other health and safety protocols.
I don't think the withdrawal of one or two players is necessarily going to lead to a wave. I think the biggest question, based on what I've heard from folks at the team level, is can everybody in these clubhouses or in these team groups start pulling in the same direction? You know, I think in baseball, what we've seen so far, what I've heard, is that it really reflects the conversation going on in this larger country, that there are some players who are all in on the social distancing, they're happy to wear a mask, that's part of their routine, and other players have indicated their teams, this is stupid, this is ridiculous, what are we doing? This is all, this is kind of a joke.
That's a problem I did not think that baseball was going to have to contend with, is trying to get everyone on board just to keep everyone else safe.
I mean, people have different opinions on this. I mean, I have friends who swear that like masks are stupid, and then I have friends who swear that this is the only way to stop the coronavirus is with the mask. I have friends who have no problem going out to restaurants and wherever, and I have others who just want to stay home. I mean, I'm sure all of us are the same. I mean, all of us know people who are completely opposite sides of the spectrum when it comes to this coronavirus. The only people that are getting it are old people, and that's it. And conspiracy theorists, and oh, they're just trying to kill off all the old people. They got less of a population. And then there's the political aspect of it as well. I mean, there's so many people that have different opinions about all of this stuff. Listen, here's my opinion. The MLBPA and Major League Baseball will come up with a set of rules and guidelines. Follow them or don't play. Simple. Here's what they're telling you have to do. If you don't want to do it, then opt out and don't play. But don't defy what the rules are, because the Players Association and the league has agreed that this is the best way to keep you safe. Now, if you don't want to follow those rules, don't play. And if you're going to play, then follow the damn rules. It doesn't seem like this is not rocket science here. They'll come up with a standard of rules, and you will follow them. And if you don't want to follow them, don't show up. I can't do that. Well, then, okay, then don't come. Don't play.
Yeah, I mean, it took such a long road to get to this point where we're actually on the verge of opening up summer camps
again. We're going to argue about what? About whether we could spit?
Yeah.
About whether you could chew seeds?
And if it means
60 games, it'll be over before you know it.
I think you said it perfectly. If it means that much to you, and if you don't agree
don't
with
play.
It, then don't play.
Don't play.
Put the rest of this fragile environment at risk because it's something that you don't want to do. Just don't participate.
Every company has protocols now, okay? We have protocols at our station.
We're wearing masks back here at the station. When we go in the hallways and when we're in offices, yeah, we're wearing masks.
Right, and there's cleaning protocols, and you know we have protocols. If you come in, if you're a visitor and you come into the station, like, there are things that you have to do in order to come into our station right now. So if you don't want to follow those protocols, they're not going to let you in. Like, if you decided, you know what, screw you guys, I'm not wearing a mask, they're going to tell you to leave.
Which is their right, especially if this is not Major League Baseball and the owners coming down and saying, hey, this is what we're going to mandate you to do. This is also in conjunction with your own union that has your best interests and has been fighting tooth and nail for every little advantage that they can give you. They're also involved in these health and safety protocols.
Yeah, listen, some people just don't want to, you know, follow, right? They don't want to follow because they don't believe it. And yeah. I get that too, right? Because some of the stuff you think is, oh my God, this is so stupid. And it is. A lot of stuff is stupid. But you have to believe that these people are just trying to, you know, they have your best interest and your health in mind. They do. Okay? That you have to believe that they care enough to make sure they're trying to keep people safe. And did they go overboard? Yeah, they're going overboard. Okay? They're going overboard. But that's what they need to do. One, to cover their ass, because they don't want to get sued. And two, because this is what everybody's agreed to. This is the best way to keep people safe. So you either decide to play or you don't play.
Coming up next here on the Burns and Gambo show. Yesterday, Adam Silver hinted at the possibility of the league shutting down in Orlando if cases get too much. So if that really is the case, and with COVID cases spiking in Florida, is it smart for the NBA to proceed to begin with? That's next on 98.7 FM.
Talk a little NBA here. Adam Silver, I spoke with an NBA player earlier today and told me he's taken four tests already. And I said, what happens if you're positive? And he's like, well, they say at least 7 days that you can't participate in anything, and you have to have two positive tests to come back. And everybody believes that's at the minimum 7 to 8 days, and it could be even longer.
Two negative tests.
Yeah, two negative tests. And then the minimum is like a week. I think 7 to 8 days is the minimum you've got to be away for. So that's where this is, you know, we're in July 1st right now. And happy Bobby Bonilla Day. Bobby Bonilla, yes, who continues to get paid every 1st of July. Over $1 million from one of the stupidest contracts in the history of baseball.
And he's going to continue to be getting paid that way until what?
Five more years, yeah. Is it?
No. It's 2035. Like,
yeah. It's another 15 years.
They could have paid him $5 million and been done with it.
Did you know he's collecting interest on that too? 8%?
Yeah. Do you know that they could have paid him $5.9 million back in 2000 and been done with it?
Just been over with it?
Instead, they decided to pay him, you know, $2 million for, like, you know, 20 years or 25 years?
His last check will come when he is 72 years old.
Lucky man.
In 2035?
Yep. Bobby Bonilla right now is 57. So 15 more years. He's going to be into his 70s, and he's still going to be getting paid by the New York Mets.
To be fair, I'm pretty sure the GM at the time invested a lot in Bernie Madoff and thought at the time it was a good idea.
They did. So. Yeah. The Ponzi scheme guy, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, geez. All right. So let's get to. So I spoke with an NBA player, and he's like, "Hey, I've been tested four times, but here's the rules." I spoke with a Major League Baseball player who just got tested today, and I said, "Hey, how's it work?" He goes, "The antibody testing was a few minutes. The spit test supposedly 24 to 48 hours. So we have to isolate until we get a negative test back." So now So I had a player today, Major League Baseball. Did the tests, antibody testing, the spit test, and now they have to isolate until the test is negative. The other thing is that, and this player told me, look, I'm expecting 5 to 10 guys from every team to have it. Just inevitable. Guys are coming from tons all over the place. Tons of guys from Texas, Florida, Arizona, chartering guys in from the Dominican, Venezuela, all together on the same planes. So, this player's telling me, man, I think we could have 5 to 10 guys on every team get this.
Yeah, yesterday, Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, was asked, what kind of spread within the Orlando bubble would constitute the NBA shutting things down?
I'm not sure. We have a panel of scientists, doctors, experts that are working with us. And, I mean, we're gonna see as we go. I mean, certainly, you know, if cases are isolated, that's one thing. I think a lot of the determination will be our understanding of how our community became infected. That will be part of our judgment in terms of whether we should continue. But certainly, if we had a lot of cases, we're going to stop.
I would say 5 to 6 players on each team would be a large amount of cases and would have to make the NBA reevaluate continuing the process in Orlando.
You know, the NBA player I was speaking with today, he asked me, he goes, like, how many do you think would shut it down? How many positive tests? Right now there's 16. And then what happens if a star player gets it? What happens if Giannis or LeBron got the coronavirus and then you're out, you're done? Like, you know, it's the if you've got to be out for 10, 12 days and you're going to miss these games, the playoff games, I mean, you could doom a team. So there is a number. I don't know what the number is, but there is a number where you say, okay, got to shut it down. 16 is not the number. The NBA had 16 positive tests out of 302. But they're testing players on a regular basis. Like I said, I spoke with a guy today, said I've been tested four times. Four times. Okay, 16 is not the number. 25, 50, 75, 100. At some point, there is a number where they're going to be like, okay, forget it. We can't play. We just don't have the team. We don't have a team. We don't have the body. Spencer Dinwiddie's not going to play. I don't know if that's announced yet. He's not going to play.
That's now 6 now for the Nets.
Yeah, I don't know if that's official yet, but I mean, I don't think Spencer Dinwiddie's going to play. From what I'm hearing, he's not going to play. So, like, that whole Nets team isn't, you know, they don't have a team. They're not going to be able to field the team. They'll have a bunch of replacement guys, probably.
Adam Silver, though, did mention that there is an idea that there is a situation, I should say, that could stop the league full right in Orlando.
I'd also say, I mean, we're testing daily. I mean, we haven't put a precise number on it, but if we were to see a large number of cases and we were to see spread in our community, that, would, of course, would be a cause for us to stop as well.
So, yeah, he said we're testing daily. That's why, you know, I told you, you know, one of the guys I spoke with
four times
I've been tested already, you know, and then, you know, you got to, after each test, you got to isolate and stuff, and you got to be responsible. They're going to try to get this going. I think right now, I mean, based on the numbers for the NBA, they're fine. They got one team that's decimated, and that's the Nets. If more teams came down, then, you know, you could be in trouble out of the teams, the 22 teams that are going to the bubble. And then again, if there was, you know, and the thing you worry about is just if you get there and then, you know, because everybody's got to travel there. And if a bunch of guys test positive, because you run out of time. And this is the thing I kept saying all you know, the last 2 weeks is, okay, once you get to July, like these guys they're showing up for training camp in the next week. Everybody's going to be in training camp in the next week. And if you get there and all of a sudden, hey, I'm out for 10 days, I got the coronavirus, well, then that guy can't practice, and he can't be around his teammates. And then, you know, you're worried about, you know, guys getting injured. He's not going to have a training camp. You're not going to expect the guy to just start playing in games. It's just it really puts the season in jeopardy if you've got a bunch of players who can't even participate in training camp.
Well, and the fewer numbers that start to take place in Orlando, once we get into the playoffs and once teams start getting eliminated, then the spotlight really gets turned on bright if there is an outbreak in cases. I mean, if we're down to the conference semifinals and there's only four teams left and we're starting to see five, six players on each team test positive, that is going to significantly impact the outcome of the rest of those playoff series.
And 100%.
With the way that the NBA has scheduled for next year, with a very short window for the offseason, they have not allowed for a lot of time. They haven't really allowed for any time to be postponed if something like that were to happen. If they needed to say, hey, we've got a rash of cases going on right now, we need to put the conference finals on hold for a week, they really don't have that luxury because of the time window with next season.
Yeah, that's the because they want to start December, right?
Yeah.
Sometime, we don't know when, but sometime in mid to late December, they want to kick it off. And now this season's not going to end. Yeah, you're not going to have any turnaround time. I would, as bad as this season's been, I mean, the chances that some of this stuff could, you know, bleed into next season, it's a real possibility.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're in July, so I mean, next season is supposed, you think about this, normally in a normal setting, like NBA players would be reporting for training camp in like 3 months, July, August, September. Except they do, you know, we would have training camp we'd be doing our media day in October. So July, August, September, 3 months from now, guys would be getting ready to report to camp. Now, that's going to be pushed back because this season got pushed forward. But, yeah, I mean, we're halfway through this year, which means we're getting closer and closer to next season starting.
Yep. So with that in mind, the Phoenix Suns are less than a week away before they will be heading to Orlando for the NBA's bubble season. Monty Williams met with the media earlier today to discuss some of the things that we might see out of the Phoenix Suns when they get to Florida. You'll hear that next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.